9.
Just hold on a second.
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
Good evening, Vice President Nixon.
Good evening, Mr. Howe.
Welches sind die Regenbogenfarben?
If you do not push a key in 3 seconds, you will be disconnected.
Mein Bruder ist jünger als ich.
Drop that. Don't drop that. I told you. Children, they never listen. They never listen. 10 minutes after 10 o'clock. Good evening to you all. It's brain damage time here on WUSD in Stony Brook, 90.1 FM on your stereo dial. And what a week it's been. What an incredible, crazy, hectic week this has been. Why, I don't know what part of the world to focus on this time, because there are so many hot spots, so many things going on at the same time that I don't think anyone knows where to focus their attention. Do we go to the Mideast? Do we go to South Africa? Do we go to the Central America chaos, or do we go to Northern Ireland? Everyone's competing. It must be what they call a sweeps week in international affairs, but we're going to try to take it all in and take in some local stuff as well, and take your phone calls at 632-6901. 11 minutes after 10 o'clock, Eric Corley with you up until midnight, and I'm going to start things off by taking a look at the news as we usually do, and here it is, off the teletype machine. From the Associated Press, Nicaragua is accusing Honduras of staging bombing raids in Nicaragua. The Sandinista government has issued a report that the attacks were conducted in the area where Honduras accused Nicaraguan troops of crossing into Honduran territory last week in pursuit of Contra rebels. Earlier today, the president of Honduras had threatened Nicaragua with air raids, but said they would be restricted to Sandinista positions inside Honduras. American officials say a decision should come this weekend, meaning tomorrow, on a request for helicopter support from the Honduran president. According to sources, Honduras wants a U.S. airlift to take Honduran soldiers near but not into the battle zone. One Reagan administration official says it's likely the plea for help will be approved. Earlier this week, President Reagan ordered 3,200 American combat troops to Honduras for what's termed training exercises. Today, many of the GIs looked relaxed at their Palmaloa headquarters, but one major says his paratroopers are ready for anything. Panamanian ruler Manuel Noriega has rejected a U.S. proposal that he seek exile in a third country. Noriega's press office today blasted what it called U.S. demands that he step down. The statement says the American position is unacceptable, illogical, and anti-Panamanian. Well, for a little more on those stories, actually a couple of different sides on them, we're going to move over to the shortwave radio, take a look at two different countries and how they reported on the Central American fiasco this week.
Reports from the Panamanian capital say tension persists in that country. On Friday, a state of emergency was imposed throughout Panama. A government decree says this measure is necessitated by the anti-Panamanian actions of the United States, which are described as an undeclared war. And now to end the news, the headlines once again. The results of Mikhail Gorbachev's visit to Yugoslavia have been subject to extensive comment worldwide. On Sunday, the Soviet Foreign Minister Eduard Shevardnadze begins his visit to Washington. The Soviet Union has completed the withdrawal of its shorter-range missiles from the German Democratic Republic. And the Soviet news agency TASS has stated the United States must stop blocking the Central American people's desire for peace. And with those headlines, we end the news.
This is the World Service of Radio Moscow.
Reports from Honduras say United States helicopters are to fly Honduran and American troops to the south of the country, where Nicaraguan forces are alleged to be still on Honduran territory. The reports say the joint force will go to within 15 miles of the Nicaraguan border. The operation is said to be part of the joint exercise being carried out by United States and Honduran forces and is not connected with the conflict on the border. Earlier, a battalion of Honduran troops was reported to have been mobilized to attack Nicaraguan forces. There were also reports that President Ascona of Honduras has ordered a second airstrike against Nicaraguan positions. Despite the fighting, President Ortega said Nicaragua would go ahead with ceasefire negotiations with the Contras as planned. The talks are due to be held on Monday near the Costa Rican border. And a report from Costa Rica itself quotes the Contras as saying that they were also ready to begin talks. In the United States, President Reagan has said that the latest fighting had been caused by the congressional decision to cut aid to the Contra rebels. In his weekly radio address, Mr. Reagan said the Contras had been weakened and the Nicaraguan government was now intent on defeating them rather than negotiating a ceasefire. Panama's military leader, General Noriega, has rejected proposals from Washington apparently aimed at persuading him to stand down and leave the country. Speaking after a meeting in Panama City with a senior United States official, General Noriega said the American offer was unacceptable and anti-Panamanian. Officials in Washington said there were no plans for a further meeting. Earlier reports said the general had imposed a number of conditions, including the dropping of drugs charges against him in the United States. Opposition groups in Panama are calling a general strike for Monday to protest at the government's imposition of a state of emergency, which in effect imposes martial law. A BBC correspondent in Panama City says families are stockpiling food in readiness for the strike, and troops are guarding strategic positions. This news comes to you in the World Service of the BBC.
And that in turn came to you over the shortwave radio. We heard from Radio Moscow and the BBC. It's interesting to turn the radio on when things like this happen. You can hear all kinds of different stories, things you don't ordinarily hear in this country. And there's a lot. There's a lot we don't hear in this country. We think we hear it all by watching ABC News and NBC News, but we really just get a taste of it all. So we're going to try to bring you more things like that in the future. Our phone number is 632-6901. If you have any comments, feel free to call up. I see we do have a couple of calls, and we will get to them as soon as we read about three more items in the news. 632-6901. Police in Athens, Greece, say four Americans were hurt today when a bomb went off in a bar popular with servicemen. Nine other people were also injured in the attack on the bar, which is near a U.S. airbase. According to authorities, the explosives were apparently placed in bag hanging from coat rack. I imagine that means in a bag hanging from coat rack. Or maybe in a bag hanging from a coat rack. For some reason, the Associated Press doesn't like to use pronouns anymore. Witnesses say there were about 25 people in the bar, which was decorated with American flags. Violence continued in Northern Ireland today when two British Army soldiers were killed at an IRA funeral. Witnesses say the men were pulled from their car, beaten, and then later shot. A statement from the outlawed Irish Republican Army claims responsibility. The killings bring this year's Northern Ireland death toll to 22. Michael Dukakis and Jesse Jackson finished 1-2 in today's Kansas Democratic caucuses. Dukakis won with about 36% of the local delegates elected, while Jackson had 31%. Jackson's strength in large cities helped him to a strong second. And members of the Writers Guild have taken time out from their picket lines to honor some of their own. Comedian Steve Martin took an honor for best screenwriting in his film Roxanne. John Patrick Shanley's work on Cher's latest film, Moonstruck, was named Best Original Screenwriting, and members of the Writers Guild went on strike to celebrate all that nearly 2 weeks ago. It's 19 minutes after 10 o'clock, and our number is 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Well, my name is Andrew Goldberger.
Yes, how are you?
Hi, I called before a lot.
Yes, that's true. What do you have to say?
Well, about this Honduran and Nicaragua thing.
Uh-huh.
I think, it's totally absurd. But I think I got an idea where Reagan and these other buffoons got this idea.
Buffoons.
have you ever turned the television switch on? You've seen all these violent programs. I mean, you can't get one decent television program that doesn't mention bad things.
Yeah, well, violence is very in our culture. That's one thing I don't think anybody can deny. Whether they approve of it or not, that's something else. But I tried this once. I tried turning on the TV set and going down the channels, starting with channel 2, then going to channel 3, 4, 5, 7, and waiting until somebody somewhere produced or mentioned a gun. And I never had to wait longer than 8, 9, 10 minutes at the most. And I made it all the way up to Channel 13. I think they took a little longer. Yeah, they obviously took a little longer because they were either asking for money or showing something British. So you don't see as many guns either way.
I know. I'd like people to call in right now. And I want to tell everyone to call. I know the number, 632-6901. And I want to tell everyone who thinks that this obscene television shouldn't be on. I want you to call in, and I want you to speak your mind out. And I want everyone to know to not watch any television and write letters to all television stations stating that you hate them.
Thanks, Andrew. And you want to give the phone number one more time?
Okay, 632-6901.
Okay, that's area code 5.
Radio station there is.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
Bye. The area code is 516 in case you're calling from some remote location that we have not yet charted. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Oh, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
Hi. This is Pete.
Hi, Pete. How are you?
How you doing? I have a couple questions I'd like to ask you guys.
Okay.
All right. Look, as you know, recently the cars have just broken up, and I'm wondering how this is going to affect maybe the tides.
Maybe the what?
The tides.
The tides. How the cars breaking up will affect the tides.
Yeah, this is kind of a science question.
Yeah, yeah.
You will.
Well, unfortunately, we don't have experts on science here. We just talk about,
Maybe being a college radio station and, you know.
Yeah, well, you know.
That's kind of sad. Maybe you guys could give me a little insight on, you know, what's going on the college scene.
Well, you know, it's interesting you should mention that. Not much. Not much is going on in this college scene. We can tell you that much.
You know, I have read recently in the papers that there has been a lot going on.
Uh-huh. In what way?
Well, I don't know. What I'm saying is, basically, is can you give me an answer to the tide question?
Well, I can give you an educated guess.
Okay.
I would say
an educated guess.
Okay.
I guess we're all looking for.
I'd say maybe.
Maybe?
Yeah, that's my educated guess anyway. Is that acceptable?
Other than the tide question, I really can't think of anything else that.
Okay. Well, do you think we're on the verge of nuclear annihilation, for instance?
Verge of nuclear annihilation?
Yeah.
Let me ask my wife.
Okay.
Are we on the verge of nuclear annihilation? We are. She's laughing hysterically. We are. She also says something about her underwear is too tight or something.
I see. Well, I'll leave you folks to deal with that then. Thanks very much for calling.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Oh, boy. 632-6901. Try to talk about relevant things and look what happens. I'd like to know how many people out there who have been listening to the news this week are able to picture in their minds a map of Central America, and know where all the countries are. I mean, I had difficulty doing this, and I like to consider myself somewhat up on things, but I think a lot of us probably have trouble figuring out where everything is in relation to each other. So when we hear that there's American troops in Honduras and Sandinistas in Nicaragua and rebels in El Salvador, we know it's all kind of down there somewhere, but we don't know exactly where. And as a result, we don't know how it ties in and what the relevance is. So for the benefit of those of you who don't have access to some kind of a map, I will now try to give you an idea of where everything is. Now, of course, I think most of us know that Mexico is our immediate neighbor to the south, and that's a pretty hefty country there. Right underneath Mexico are actually two countries, Belize, formerly British Honduras, and Guatemala to the west, Belize to the east. Then the whole landmass kind of takes a turn to the east, and you have El Salvador on the southern part and Honduras on the northern part, and that's where our troops are residing right now. Right underneath Honduras and close to El Salvador is Nicaragua, and underneath Nicaragua, Costa Rica, and then over the landmass takes another turn to the east, and over to the east of Costa Rica is Panama, and then after Panama comes South America, which we don't have to talk about today if we don't want to. So that's where it all kind of boils in there. And boiling is what it's doing this weekend. Guatemala, Belize, Honduras, Nicaragua, El Salvador, Costa Rica, and Panama. And, of course, Mexico, should they choose to get involved in all of this. An editorial from the New York Times a couple of days ago entitled "Rushing to React in Honduras" might be of interest to people following the situation. If Nicaragua were intent on occupying Honduran territory, that might justify President Reagan's dispatch of 3,200 U.S. troops to support an aggrieved ally. Yesterday's truculent declarations from President Daniel Ortega suggest again that Managua knows how to snatch defeat from the jaws of political victory. But the facts surrounding the incursion remain murky, and there's no evidence at all that the Sandinistas are trying to seize a piece of Honduras, a stupidity that would give the Reagan administration a justifiable, someone's going to get me on this, casus belli. That's a Latin term, and probably pronounced it wrong, and I'm sorry. More likely, the White House is inflating a strike against Contra forces on the border to whip up support in Congress for renewed military aid to the rebels. And that, I believe, happened either today or yesterday. You know, it was yesterday, where a couple of senators, both Democrat and Republican, actually proposed another bill to aid the Contras. This one, I believe, giving $5 million in lethal aid. Now, if you recall, the bills that were coming up about a week or so ago did not have anything for lethal aid, so that's exactly what's happening. The White House is inflating a strike against Contra forces on the border to whip up support in Congress for renewed military aid to the rebels. Such an interpretation, though cynical, is warranted by Mr. Reagan's 7-year record of deception, arrogance, and contempt for diplomacy in Nicaragua. That record has borne a widespread loss of trust in the administration's word, culminating in Wednesday's criminal indictments, which is something else we haven't even gotten into yet. Oliver North and all those nice folks getting indicted on criminal charges for the Iran-Contra scandal. Getting back to the editorial, whenever a nation offers sanctuary to guerrillas embroiled in a neighbor's civil war, it incurs a risk. During the Vietnam War, President Nixon repeatedly used the argument of hot pursuit to justify incursions into Cambodia and Laos. Nicaragua can make the same argument with even more justification. Honduras is required to close Contra camps under the regional peace plan it signed last August. Honduras has ignored the requirement, and so does Mr. Reagan, even as he upbraids Nicaragua for failing to comply with other provisions of the plan. It has happened before. In March 1986, a cross-border raid was magnified into a menacing invasion. The Honduran president was nudged into requesting U.S. help to ferry troops to the jungle frontier. Despite denials, there's more than a suspicion this time that President José Azcona-Hoyo requested U.S. troops only after American prodding. Yesterday he went further, sending planes to retaliate inside Nicaragua. What quickens suspicion of the administration's purposes is the timing, just as it begins a fresh campaign in Congress for aid to the Contras. Only a few days ago, House Republicans, at White House urging, spitefully killed a Democratic plan for some such aid. Relief for Central America does not lie in sending military aid to the Contras or troops to Honduras. It lies instead in negotiations under the regional peace plan with the aim of integrating the Contras in a pluralist Nicaragua. Prospects for success will be incomparably improved if Mr. Reagan and his aides worked as hard to escalate compliance as they do to escalate the stakes. And an editorial in the New York Times, actually I'm not certain as to the date on that, but it was 1 or 2 days ago. And I'd like to hear if anyone out there has a reaction to what's going on in Central America. It may very well involve you sooner than you think. Either people that you know may be ending up over there, or you yourself may be ending up over there. And it's not inconceivable, because look at where we were, say, 8 years ago. And now look at where we are today, actually sending troops down to Central America, something that a lot of us thought would not happen. And a lot of the more cynical ones among us thought it was only a matter of time. And I don't believe I have anything else on Central America, which means I'm going to be moving to another trouble spot in a second. Or I could do the elections first. What do we have today? A primary, a caucus, Democratic presidential caucuses in Kansas, with 112 of 117 caucuses reporting, which is 96%. Dukakis, 39%. Jackson, 27%. Gore, 17%. Uncommitted, 15%. Gephardt, 2%. And Simon, 0%. Okay, we have some calls. 632-6901, area code 516. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Oh, I didn't mean to be on Brain Damage.
Okay, well, you're not anymore. We never want give people things they don't want. It's 31 minutes after 10 o'clock. And we have a special guest coming in, too, who will be here momentarily. So we'll be talking about all kinds of still other things, or maybe the same old things. I've got a mountain of papers here on the console, in case you can't tell from the sound of it. So forgive me for a moment if I sound rather unorganized, because that's exactly what it is. Well, while I'm trying to get my act together, let's go to the phones again. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Is Chris Crowley there?
No, he is not. I don't know what's going on here. 632-6901, that's the phone number to call if you want to be on the air, not if you want to ask questions about things that have nothing to do with what's going on over the air. However, Chris, if you're listening, if you recognize that voice, call that person. Oh, yes, Jesse Jackson. Okay, let's talk about Jesse Jackson then. The Reverend Jesse Jackson swept to victory with 54% of the vote in South Carolina's Democratic presidential caucus a week ago. All around him were joyous supporters patting his back, an old teacher talking of the hometown boy who made it despite the odds, a one-time neighbor wishing him the best when he moves into the White House. Yet even during this hour of glory in his native Greenville, the question loomed about what Jackson's consistently strong showing in the party primaries will mean for him, and the speculation that it will mean he'll emerge nothing more than a powerful player. Not the party's nominee appeared on this night to be on the mind of not only Jackson, but also of his staff and his supporters, who now, more than ever, seemed fired up for victory. Jackson, at that point, had won in seven states, and I believe the figure of seven states still holds. With his latest win, his delegate total went to 423.55. Of course, that's changed after tonight and after the Illinois primaries last Tuesday. He is in second place behind Massachusetts Governor Michael Dukakis. Jackson got 23 delegates in South Carolina, compared with 18 for uncommitted and 6 for Tennessee Senator Albert Gore. As he told a ballroom packed with about 3,000 supporters a few nights earlier in Chicago, there's idle talk, traumatized talk about brokering. Well, one doesn't need to run to broker. One needs to run to win. I'm running to win. Those who suggest otherwise insult the integrity of our voters. And we have a lot of other things on Jesse Jackson. And all the other candidates, too, for that matter. But Jesse Jackson, I think, is the most interesting. He's different. You have to admit one thing, whether you like him or not, he is different from all the others. And I guess the most disturbing aspect to the whole thing is that about 95% of black people are voting for Jackson, and about maybe 5% of white people are. So if that doesn't indicate that there's some kind of a gap between the races, I don't think anything does. And if anyone out there is voting for him or is not voting for him and has strong feelings either way, give us a call at 632-6901. Let us know why. Let us know how you feel about the whole election and who is running this year. While I talk about Jackson edging out Dukakis in, of all places, Alaska, he won nearly 35% of the delegates. I was selected at the Alaska Democratic Party precinct caucuses, narrowly edging out Governor Michael Dukakis of Massachusetts, who took 31%. These results should translate into at least 4 national convention delegates for Mr. Jackson and at least 3 for Mr. Dukakis, with 5 others uncertain. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
How you doing?
Hello. How are you?
Pretty good.
What's on your mind?
Oh, I think the whole election is just pathetic this year.
Why is it pathetic?
For the people that have running.
Well, compare it to elections of previous years. Is it any different?
Well, I think Ronald Reagan did a semi-good job, but like he did, a lot of things that he did were not too bright, if you know what I mean.
Uh-huh. Well, now, what do you think of Jesse Jackson? We were just talking about him.
Well, I believe, he's kind of a mixed character. You can't really explain him in one word.
Uh-huh.
Talking about.
Yeah. I've noticed that, as I was saying before, most white people seem not to want to vote for him pretty emphatically, and most black people just as emphatically are for him. Now, Do you feel emphatically either way?
I'm not a racist, but I wouldn't vote for him.
Why not? I mean, would you, if you had a choice between, let's say...
Because I believe that it'd be like... If he got into the White House, it'd be like a lot of problems.
What kind of problems?
Well, there'd be people like the KKK would probably be, it would be like hell.
You mean the KKK would be up in arms?
Yeah.
Now, do you think it's right not to put somebody in the White House because a terrorist group would be upset by that?
No, they can go in the White House. I don't care.
Uh-huh.
But someone, like the other people they have in the election, like George Bush.
Yeah.
I can't see people like George Bush running the country.
Unfortunately, I don't really see how we're going to get out of that. It seems like he's the one that's going to get it either way, no matter what happens.
Robert Dole and...
Now, the thing is, the difference, what I was saying before was Jackson is not boring. Everybody else, I think, is boring. I mean, you know...
Caucus sounds like a disease.
It sure does. It sure does. But just watching these people in action, they're just, you know, they wear the yarmulkes when they're addressing Jewish people. They wear construction caps when they're in a building. But Jackson, when he talks, you get the feeling that he knows a little bit more about what people need and what people want.
He kind of screams at people.
He does, but I think we need that occasionally. I don't know. He just seems so energetic and true to his beliefs. Whether or not they're my beliefs, I just think that's kind of important. And I think if anyone's going to stop the military madness, it'll be somebody that knows what it's like to be apart from it all, if you know what I mean. Not part of the mainstream.
Well, do you, like, believe that he could clean up the country or what? Like, what's the deficit?
Well, I don't know much about the deficit. I don't know much about the economic issues.
Billion.
What's that?
Like a few billion.
Yeah, it's a few billion, all right. I don't know if anybody can help out. I think we might just, you know, give it to a computer and have it work it out. I don't know if humans are capable of this anymore.
We take all money and we give to other countries instead of, like, helping our own people.
Uh-huh. Well, that's something that maybe we should take a look at.
Say USA for Africa. Like, a lot of people I know say USA for USA.
Yeah. Well, of course, the USA is a bit responsible for some of the mess that Africa has gotten into. Certainly parts of the other world, such as Asia and South America, Central America. So maybe some would say we owe them that much. It's hard to say. But anyway, thanks for calling.
All right.
632-6901, area code 516. And getting back to the Jackson News, it was whites, this is back in Alaska, it was whites who carried the vote for Mr. Jackson at the nearly 440 caucuses held around the state Thursday night. Mr. Jackson drew support from Alaska's black population as well, but that is only 3% of the state's 530,000 people. About 31% of the 2,498 delegates chosen were listed as uncommitted. The caucuses were open only to registered Democrats. Jack Roderick, the party chairman, said Mr. Jackson appealed to the traditional Democratic issues, human resource values, as well as to Alaskans hard hit by the deep slump in oil prices. Mr. Roderick and other party officials said Mr. Jackson's Alaska organization ran a well-organized grassroots campaign. Henry Lancaster, Mr. Jackson's Alaska campaign director, said the candidate appealed to working-class people of all colors because of his message. Mr. Roderick said the showings by Mr. Jackson and Mr. Dukakis were partly influenced by the results of the primaries and caucuses on Super Tuesday, in which both did well. So, Jackson winning in Alaska. It's nice to see surprises occasionally, even if you don't agree with what the surprises mean. It's just nice to see surprises that don't have to do with invading other countries and things like that. Well, I guess that kind of sums up our listeners' feelings on Jesse Jackson or the election or anything. But once again, let me say, call us 632-6901 if you have any feelings at all on this. And if you don't, well, I guess that's a good indication of how the rest of the country feels and perhaps why we're in such trouble. Gary Hart, of course, he's quit again. I had an article on him for last week, but what's the point? What's the point of even focusing on him anymore? Here's something that kind of underlines what I said a few minutes ago An article from the New York Times, Jackson assails foes on South Africa. Now, if you've been watching the primaries, the elections, you have not seen very much emphasis on South Africa or on any of the controversial parts of the world, for that matter. Well, Jesse Jackson has accused his rivals for the Democratic presidential nomination of being passive in their disapproval of the South African government. He urged the other candidates to join him in pledging to order all American companies out of South Africa by a date certain, unless fair and free elections are held there. Resuming his campaign after a second-place finish in the Illinois primary, Mr. Jackson first raised South Africa policy at a news conference in Chicago. He expanded on his foreign policy positions later in an interview as he flew to Washington. His criticism took the tone of a mild rebuke rather than the kind of stinging attacks that his opponents have frequently leveled at one another. Indeed, he was conciliatory when he coincidentally crossed paths with Senator Albert Gore of Tennessee at a private air terminal here. The two candidates spoke before television cameras and spoke, in Mr. Jackson's words, of the absolute necessity of keeping the party together and of maximizing the opportunity for a Democratic victory in November. Mr. Gore said he favored the strongest possible sanctions against South Africa, but stopped short of saying the United States government should order American companies to leave. Rather than criticize Mr. Gore to his face, Mr. Jackson said, "That is precisely the appeal I made today." Nonetheless, his statements today were the first in the campaign to take his opponents to task on a particular policy issue. The other candidates have taken a non-aggressive posture relative to South Africa. They must take a stand to end apartheid, he said, not just be against it. His rivals, he said in the interview, are at ease talking about arms negotiations with the Soviet Union, but are uncomfortable with the intricacies of policies on South Africa, the Middle East, the debts of Latin American countries, and drug trafficking. These other issues, he said, are more of an immediate threat to American security than are Soviet weapons. He said that the United States and the Soviet Union were both put at serious risk by less stable governments and nuclear proliferation in the Third World, and that Third World debt is a ticking time bomb. Mr. Jackson would bring all the economic pressure the United States can muster on the South African government. He would require American companies to leave the country, end all trade and banking relations, and would give military aid and more economic assistance to the surrounding countries in Southern Africa. He noted that the Reagan administration had ordered American companies to leave Libya and had imposed other sanctions because of that country's terrorist activities. By brutalizing blacks, he said, South Africa engages in state-sponsored terrorism and deserves from the United States the same treatment as Libya. He is sharply critical of the Reagan administration's South Africa policy, although today he praised the president for his appeal Tuesday for amnesty for six black South Africans who convicted of complicity in a mob killing in 1984 in Sharpeville, south of Johannesburg, are to be executed Friday. And I apologize for that sentence that really kind of rambled all over the place there. Mr. Jackson's basic prescription for dealing with third world countries is negotiation. If we can have relations with China and Russia, certainly we can negotiate with Castro and Cuba, he says frequently. In the Middle East, he would promote an independent Palestinian state while guaranteeing the security of Israel, and would use his influence to bring both sides to the negotiating table. Further, the United States and the Soviet Union must cooperate to end the Iran-Iraq war, he said today. He would have communications with Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini, the Iranian leader, and put pressure on Iran to comply with the United Nations resolution calling for a ceasefire. Mr. Jackson describes the flow of drugs into the United States as the number one national security problem. He would strengthen the Coast Guard and the Customs Service and use the military to stop drug traffic from Latin America and elsewhere. He would also use diplomatic pressure and economic aid to persuade countries to stop producing narcotics. His principal solution to the debt problem in Latin America is to strengthen the region's economy so that the nations there would be in a better position to buy American products. And there it is, Jesse Jackson. How do you folks feel? Anything that you've heard today change your mind either way? I'd like to know, because for the longest time, when Jackson was running, and when Jackson was the front runner in the Democratic race, which he was for a time before things started to get a bit more organized, he was completely ignored by the press, completely. And now, finally, after winning seven states, he's being taken seriously as a candidate. So give us a call, 632-6901. Tell us if you have strong feelings either way, or weak feelings either way, or any feelings anyway. It's 1046. This is Brain Damage until 12 o'clock. Taking your phone calls and talking about all kinds of other things. And we will come back right after this special public service announcement with all kinds of music and stuff.
Hi, Long Island. After Dark is back. Sundays from 11 to 11:30 on 90.1 FM WUSB Stony Brook, first station in the 90s. On future shows, I'll profile the first woman to preside over the Suffolk County Legislature and take a look at that gas leak in our own backyard. Hi, I'm Rachel Gonzalez. Join me for a look at the issues that concern Long Island on After Dark. Sundays, 11 to 11:30, only on 90.1 FM, WUSB Stony Brook.
You're not alone when you're feeling down and there's no one.
This is John Connolly inviting you to join with us every Monday night for the John Connolly Show at 11 p.m. as we explore the latest psychological, parapsychological, and metaphysical phenomena. You're invited to call in for personal psychic, tarot, and astrological readings and to consult with our expert psychics, psychologists, and healers. That's the John Connolly Show every Monday night at 11 p.m. right here on WUSB-FM in Stony Brook.
Well, I feel a lot better now. I don't feel a lot better because people are calling. Well, I see one call is in. Oh, there it goes. It's gone. But I feel better because I found a box of chocolate donuts behind me. Did you bring those in, Bill?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Help yourself.
What's wrong with people today? Why don't people call up and want to talk about these things? You know? What, do we have stupid listeners? Do we have any listeners? Is it transmitter on? What's going on here?
I don't know. It's kind of tough to say. You know, Long Island is kind of a wacky place.
Well, we had this once before, and I don't want to take a lot out of you because I know it takes some energy. But you gave a pitch once for phone calls.
Yeah.
And I never saw so many lights light up. It was like incredible. It was like a city lighting up, you know, turning on the light switch. If you could do something sort of similar to that again, you might just sort of save things here tonight and put my faith back in the listeners and maybe the world in general and just, you know, make life worth living again.
He throws the challenge in my lap, ladies and gentlemen. What can I do? It's 1988.
You already have three calls.
1988 and you people are sleeping.
I don't believe this.
I mean,
he just has to open his mouth.
It's time to wake up and smell the coffee, as the cliche goes. But there's an entire planet down this world. It's not just Suffolk County that is in existence that people are walking around and stuff like that. Try to picture all around the globe that there are people, most of them, in much less of a advantageous situation than yourself. And they're just like you, and they feel pain just like you, and they're suffering. And here we are. You never know what's going to happen here in the United States the way things are going right now. I, for one, truly feel that there could be another Holocaust. Who the heck knows what could happen to us here in the United States? I'm worried about this new election. As Eric said, I have to kind of agree with him that Jesse Jackson, pardon the pun, he's the only colorful candidate, let's say, and I think we're in trouble, but that's just my opinion.
That's what I want. I want to hear people's opinions.
Now let's talk
about
it.
Not just mine. Yeah.
You know, let's talk about it. I mean, do people even have an opinion? If you have no opinion, call up and say, I have no opinion, because there might be a very valid reason you have no opinion. That this constant media blitzkrieg is very numbing sometimes. If you turn on the news, CNN, 24 hours a day, you sit there in front of the television, you're just like, well, I don't know what to think anymore. Because there are so many people telling you what they think. Well, let's hear what you think right now at 632-6901, the area code 516. Let's hear from Connecticut, too, huh?
Yeah, no, we have three calls. They've been ringing since you started talking. But we haven't gotten any new ones since you gave that whole speech. And it takes a few seconds for the calls to be processed and come into
I'm shaking here now, okay?
Yeah, he's like a minister, you know, one of those ministers on the gospel hour.
I was on television. You can see how much my hands are moving.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Bill, for coming in and helping to boost things here. 632-6901. Let's hear your opinion or lack of opinion or whatever. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Well, I don't want to reveal my name, but I think there should be a contest on the show.
What kind of contest?
Like movie tickets and stuff like that.
Well, we don't have any movie tickets or any kind of tickets, but gosh, you know, in a way, if you call up, you get the biggest prize of all, the chance to talk to people all over Long Island and express your thoughts, you know? Isn't that something?
What?
Yeah, right. 632-6901. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Hey, Eric.
Hello, how are you?
Hey, isn't it kind of a cliche to say Jesse Jackson is the most colorful candidate?
Well, yes, I believe he said pardon the pun, but it is true, I think. I don't know, maybe it's not true. Does anyone else have color?
What's that? You gotta give away movie tickets.
We're not going to give away movie tickets. No, no. Don't worry about that.
No, you got to have problems. I mean, what would life be like without problems?
Yeah, well, I'm not advocating problems, but we do have problems, and we should discuss them in a lively, informative way, not just a boring, bland way.
Well, if you didn't have problems, things would just be boring as hell, you know?
That's true. Well, let's give out our phone number one more time. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hello. Yes, about Jesse Jackson.
Yeah.
I believe he's probably the best one running right now.
Why is that?
Well, about the issues, he's probably the most of my beliefs, you know, with the abortion and the military aid to Nicaragua and everything.
Uh-huh. How long have you been aware of his positions on these?
Well, back since 84.
Uh-huh.
I didn't vote for him back then because I felt he would be too radical.
Yeah.
Trying to change things too much, you know.
What do you think it means that someone who could be defined as radical has gained such support in 1988?
I believe the other ones are doing nothing. All the other candidates, they don't interest me at all.
Uh huh.
And I think a lot of people feel that way. That's why he's gaining so much support.
You see, the reason that I think Jackson might make a good president is because he's the only one I see as actually making, making changes. Him in the White House, I can see major changes being made. I can't see that with anyone else. Everyone else pretty much looks the same to me. Now, that might just be a face value type of a judgment, but I think he states his feelings on something, and he causes controversy when he does, but I think he's being honest, more honest than the other ones who just want to please whatever crowd they're in front of at the moment.
Yeah, he speaks what he believes in. Trying to do good for the people of America.
Uh-huh.
And that's what he's selling, and people are picking up on it.
The people around you, do you sense a change in their feelings as to who they support?
Not really. I believe in Jackson. I was converted over like a few months ago, you know.
Uh-huh.
Past elections, primaries. I've been listening, and he's sounding the best out of all of them.
What do you think it means that so many Black people support Jackson, and so many white people don't support Jackson? What does that indicate to you?
Well, as I said, in 84, I wouldn't support Jackson for fear of him pushing too much on the Black people, you know?
Uh-huh.
And now, the other politicians, the other candidates don't do nothing for me, so...
So it's more out of a sense of frustration that you're going over to Jackson.
Yeah, he speaks what I want to hear, basically, you know.
Uh-huh. All right, well, thank you very much for calling. What town are you calling from?
I'm from Selma, but I'd like to make a point about Nicaragua.
Okay, go right ahead.
First, the scenario is first we send military advisors, then aid, now troops. Didn't this just happen, like, 20 years ago in another country?
I think it did.
Gee.
I think it did, and that's very true. First the advisors, then the aid, now the troops. Next it'll be the kids around us.
Yeah,
that'll be taking little field trips.
Fight, but the down there, Ortega said he's going to liquidate the U.S. troops and fucking retaliate that, you know?
Uh-huh. All right, well, thanks very much for calling.
Okay, thank you.
632-6901 is our phone number. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
Fine. What's on your mind?
Nothing much. I'd just like to say hello.
Okay, hello. How are you?
Okay.
What do you think of Nicaragua and Honduras?
They're okay.
Oh, that's nice. And where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Fort Jeff.
Well, okay, that's in the real world.
Okay, so I want to talk to you.
Hi.
Hi.
I know that Nicaragua.
Uh-huh. Well, you're feeding back. 632-6901 is our phone number, area code 516. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Hi, it's Andrew Goldberg again.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, I have two things that are bothering me.
Okay, make it quick, because we have other calls.
Oh, sure.
Go ahead.
First is ladies wrestling. I mean, it's so pathetic.
Ladies wrestling, okay, what's the second one?
And the second is, I think Mr. Radio should be a full-time radio DJ.
Okay, well, we'll make note of those. Thank you very much.
Bye.
632-6901.
Ladies wrestling.
Good evening. You're on Brain Damage. Is anyone there? Oh, he waited a long time to say that. I wonder what he said. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
How you doing? Are we talking about Jesse Jackson here?
We can.
Okay. Am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
No, I think Jesse's a little radical. I plan to vote for the man, but...
Oh, dear, he hung up, too. I don't know why people can't finish what they start saying. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Yeah, I'd just like to say I've been listening to your program, and I wholeheartedly agree with you about Jesse Jackson. I think he's actually the man we really need.
Uh-huh. What do you think he would do if he was in the White House?
Well, I'm not sure, but I'm certain he'd do an awful lot more than anybody else on the horizon at this point. It seems like it could well shape up to be the most... interesting political picture since probably Nixon and Kennedy.
Uh-huh. I like to think that with someone like Jackson in the White House, there wouldn't be Contras for very long. I just can't see how it would be possible.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. And
an American involvement in Central America would really be a fantasy.
Yeah, I think we need to turn our involvement back home to the problems that face us here in this country and... get away from trying to be the policeman in the world.
Yeah, because it's just, it's really not realistic to do that in today's age. At least I don't think so. It's kind of a futile gesture, and it makes the rest of the world look at us with contempt.
Sure.
And I don't know what exactly everyone has in mind, but if nothing else, if Jesse Jackson will get people out of Central America, will get the troops out of there, and possibly save some American lives in another ridiculous war... then I think we have an obligation to put someone who can be assured of doing that into the White House. That's not necessarily a pitch for Jesse Jackson. Anyone that has the potential of doing that or the certainty of doing that should be put in there as quickly as possible. Certainly George Bush isn't going to do that.
No. He seems to be a continuation of the problem that's been going on. There are so many other, even more important problems in Central America. The environment... and the terrible condition of things, even the economic picture looks very, very bad at this point. I think we're in for some real hard times ahead, and it's going to take terrific change to get through them. And I don't see that coming from anybody else.
Would you go to a protest demonstration against U.S. policy in Central America, as some people have been doing over the last couple of days?
Well, you know, I just turned 40 years old. And, of course, back in the 60s, I was in the forefront of all that stuff, and I took it up avidly and really felt very, very good about what my positions were. However, it's been a long time since I've even considered anything like this, but I must say, if things continue to go the way it looks like they may, and if the political picture heats up, I would consider becoming, you know, much more politically active than I have been in the past.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, what town are you calling from, sir?
I'm a contractor over in Ocean Beach in Fire Island.
Fire Island, are you picking up our signal down there?
Oh, yeah. We get you real well over here.
Oh, that's great. That's great. How is Fire Island this time of year?
Well, it's been desolate, but it's starting to warm up.
Uh-huh.
People, are, of course, boats are running. People are coming over, and we're getting back into the 1988 season here. We're looking
uh-huh.
forward to it.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for calling.
Okay. Thank you.
Good evening. 632-6901. That's our telephone number, area code 516. Give us a call. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Yes, I think the whole thing is a mess and everything, and the Russians should stop using the little countries.
Should stop using what?
The little countries that they're fighting against.
Which countries are those?
Nicaragua.
Yeah.
Honduras.
Uh-huh. Could you elaborate?
What do you mean?
Explain that a little bit more, please.
The Russians and the United States are using all the other countries to fight against each other.
Uh-huh.
Why don't they just fight against each other by itself?
In other words, why doesn't Russia just fight us to start with?
Exactly.
That's an interesting way of looking at it.
Yes.
Let's suggest that and see how it goes over.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Could you do me a favor?
All right, if it's reasonable.
Happy birthday to Mary.
Happy birthday, Mary.
Happy birthday, Mary!
Okay. Yes, happy birthday, Mary. May there be many more. 632-6901 is our phone number. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hello.
Hi.
How you doing? Well, first about the Russians and the United States, I wonder if she's talking about, like, full-scale global thermonuclear war, just passive fighting with machine guns. Like, what is she talking about?
I wasn't quite sure, and I didn't really want to pursue it. I imagine she is saying what everyone else is saying. Just let's cut it all out, for God's sake, and get on with life. Maybe. I hope that's what you were saying.
The Soviet Union is even communism. Like, communism is just living together with no money at all. And communism, what Karl Marx was communism, was just a totally different idea than what the Soviet Union is running under socialism.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, it's been...
Communism, there is no... I mean, like, before communism comes into effect, you know, I'm talking about you learn about the dictatorship of the proletariat.
Uh-huh.
And communism is no government, but the government's definitely running everything over there.
You mean true communism is a form of anarchy?
Well, it's not. True communism is an anarchy. It's just people living together. It's like Thomas More's utopia.
People taking care of each other.
Well, people living together and sharing products.
Uh-huh.
And you go with surplus, but...
Well, yeah, I mean, on the face of it, that doesn't really seem to go against human values. You share things and you take care of each other. I think the main problem comes with totalitarianism, which unfortunately seems to go along with communism quite a bit. Perhaps it's just the way that it's been enforced. I'm not sure. I don't know enough about it to really say if it could work out in an ideal situation.
No, but true communism is, totally impossible, because there's always going to be that one person in the crowd who wants more.
Uh-huh.
And it's going to, upset the whole system. So that's why there's, problems, except in a country, there's, lots of people who want more, and it just gets out of hand.
What about capitalism?
Well, capitalism, I don't really believe what Marx said, that it would destroy itself, but, see, capitalism is kind of like a chance. You know, I'm talking about, when Adam Smith started it back, I wasn't. 1700s.
Uh-huh.
It's a good system to run under, I mean,
But it does seem to be doing some self-destructive things, as far as, at least in this country, the national debt and teetering on the brink of depression and stock market crashes and all that kind of thing. It seems kind of iffy at times.
About the election, I'm going to be glad to see Reagan go.
Uh-huh.
Ronald Reagan is not just taking... He's just sitting in the White House doing nothing.
Yeah.
And he's the candidates they have now are just horrible.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, Jesse Jackson is the only one who really shows any interest in some of the problems. Like, he showed interest in drug abuse.
Do you think Reagan is actually making these decisions, or is he pretty much just being led around?
I'm not even sure if he's being fed by himself.
Uh-huh.
Probably has somebody to feed him at night.
So you think Reagan is really a shell of a person now?
Well, I believe, a lot of the moves that supposedly he made, when he bombed Libya,
uh-huh.
showed, strength and stuff. That was good, but, the whole Iran scam thing,
uh-huh.
kind of, upset. He's kind of like the Nixon of the 80s.
I've heard that said before. All right, thanks very much for calling.
All right.
632-6901. Where is the president's brain? Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hi. Would you mind if I change the subject?
If you change the subject, well, you can try. It's up to our listeners to follow whatever the subject is.
Well, I want to talk about parents.
About parents. Okay, what about parents?
Yeah, do you have parents of your own?
Well, I did, yes.
Are they strict with you?
They were not very restrictive, no. You know, it's a question of what is reasonable and what isn't. And, of course, when you're... how old are you, may I ask?
I'm 13.
13. When you're 13, things seem a lot different than when you're 18. And when you're 18, things seem a lot different from when you're 25. So the world is constantly changing, both the big world and the small world. So things that seem unreasonable that your parents do at 13 somehow seem different when you're 18. And you can sort of look back and laugh on it.
How old are you?
Well, that's a matter of personal secrecy there. We don't talk about age on this radio station. We're all ageless on the air. So I'm just a voice. You don't really even know if I really exist.
Is this like your own radio station? Like you have it in the dorm or something?
Yeah, well, I have personally taken over the radio station, and no one gets in here without a personal okay from me, you see. No, actually, it is the radio station of the State University of New York at Stony Brook.
Oh.
Which I also control.
Oh. My cousin's going there.
Excuse me?
My cousin goes there.
I thought you said your husband's going there. But, oh, okay, well, that's good. I think they'll enjoy this place.
Oh.
Make sure you tell them 90.1 FM. That's all you have to know when you go to Stony Brook.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for calling.
All right.
In fact, that's all good people, good deal the people do know when they get out of here. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Good evening. Since everybody seems to be so pro Jesse Jackson this evening, what do you think about the item in the news a couple of weeks ago about Jesse Jackson not really being there at the time of Martin Luther King's assassination, as he's been claiming all along, and his Martin Luther King's family denying that was true?
Well, I remember reading something about Martin Luther King saying to Jesse Jackson, you've got to learn to love, or something to that effect. Is that correct? He did not seem to know how to reach out to people at that point. He seemed rather bitter. Perhaps you could fill us in a little bit more as to what that story said.
There was some story that, you know, that he's been saying since he was very active, of course, with civil rights in the 60s, that, you know, one of the examples is that he was right there on the day that Martin Luther King was assassinated.
What does he mean by right there? Right there in Memphis?
I think that he was in the close vicinity of where he was speaking. So, I mean, that Martin Luther King knew he was there, but his family is denying that this is true for some reason. This was about 2 weeks ago. This was in the news.
I'd like to know more about it myself. If he's, you know, blatantly lying and saying that that he did something that he didn't do, that's obviously a bad thing. If it's a question of interpretation and he didn't actually mean to say that he was there when he was there in spirit or something, I don't really know. I don't have the facts on that.
Okay, well, just wanted to let you know. I don't like to hear, you know, anyone being too pro any candidate.
Uh huh. Well, what's your feeling on it?
Well, I feel like that because everyone is so disgusted with all the candidates, and Jesse has been chugging along for a while now, you know, people really think, well, you know, maybe we should really give him a try now, and let alone that everybody is afraid that Bush is going to get the election again, and I think that politics is a tainted business.
Uh-huh.
So.
Yeah, well, I think most of us will agree with you on that.
Anyway, just wanted, you know, everyone's calling up is very pro. I like to get...
Well, I'm glad we got at least one call like that. I hope we get more. What town are you calling from?
Stony Brook.
Okay, well, thanks for calling.
Okay.
632-6901 is our number. And Don Kenyon, you're here.
Yeah, I'm here. I don't know how here I am, but I guess I'm here.
Well, you suddenly sort of beamed in like they do on the next generation of Star Trek.
You know, I was listening earlier. Did the first caller tell, you know, way back at the beginning of this program, did the first caller say that television violence was the reason we were in Honduras, or I mean, did I hear that wrong?
Television violence makes it more acceptable somehow.
How many television sets does he think are in the country of Nicaragua anyway?
What does that have to do with it?
We're talking about violence in Nicaragua. We're so culturally centrific here.
Yeah.
As I drool all over myself. It's not TV. You didn't see that, so you're lucky. But, I mean, we're so culturally centrific here that we think that television is corrupting people in Nicaragua. I mean, let's wake up here, guys.
Well, I don't know. No, I think he was saying that television makes the idea of sending U.S. troops down and doing battles, Contras, all that kind of thing. I think from our end. Maybe I misinterpreted.
I apologize, then, because that argument almost makes sense.
Yeah. It's interesting, though. You know, television, a lot of people, a lot of the rightist element want to get rid of all the sex on TV, but they don't say that much about the violence. And I, on the other hand, feel that violence is doing much more harm than the sex. But for some reason, when you want to take the violence off, you're considered a leftist. Now, I wonder why that is. And
well,
you're in a
way,
we're saying,
producer, you want violent sex.
Well, that's true. In a way, we're saying the same thing. We're saying we want something is harmful to people and should be not regulated so much, but certainly not as abundant and as tasteless as it is. But we're considered at different ends of the spectrum, even though we're saying kind of the same thing. You know what I mean? No. Well, it doesn't really matter, I guess.
So she said, the last caller said all the calls were running pro. What were we running pro to?
We were talking about Jesse Jackson and how he appears to be the only candidate that seems to be saying anything different. I mean, radically different.
Oh, so all the callers were pro-Jesse Jackson?
I wouldn't say they were pro-Jesse Jackson, but they could see how he was different and how he would make a difference if he was put in the White House.
Well, there's one way that he's very different.
How's that?
That the media doesn't think he exists in terms of a legitimate candidate.
I think they've been forced to now. They have to pay attention to him. At the beginning, yes, that was very true, because he was in front of everybody else. He was leading. And when Gary Hart dropped out the first time, he was ahead of everybody else because no one really knew who to vote for at that point. Gary Hart's gone. What do we do? Oh, my God. And somehow Jesse Jackson was in the front for a little while.
Well, it wasn't until the last 2 weeks then. I don't know. Sometimes I wonder if Jesse Jackson is a creation of the media. The media, as we well know, we being part of it, is somewhat leftist at times. Or if everybody's saying he can't really win, because now remember that he was number one in the polls for a very long time, and you know, when they said who's going to be the nominee, he was never mentioned. Now we're getting along to the point where he has a significant body of votes and people are almost afraid. For instance, I'm going to be moving out of the area. My wife was talking to some of her coworkers upstate in a small burg. And one of her
Smallburg, is that the name of the town?
No, it's called Utica, but it's a small burg as opposed to the big burg.
Okay.
Anyway, so but she was talking to a coworker who said said something along the lines of, "Is anybody really going to vote for him?" And of course, the unfinished part of the sentence was, "He's a black man. No one will vote for him." So I guess I'm of two minds. Part of me says that this undercurrent of nobody will vote for a black man doesn't really exist, and the people who are saying that are just ignoring the reality of Jackson's candidacy, whatever that word is. And the other part of me says, no, he really can't, because, as they used to say, it won't play in Peoria. Or wherever that place is in Illinois.
When Kennedy first was running for president back in the... did he run in before 1960?
He walked fast.
Yeah, well, people said they would not elect a Catholic.
Well, that's...
So it's not as radical, I'll give you, but it is indicative of how things have changed. Of course,
most Americans only care about religion, religion at birth, baptism, or births and bar mitzvah and first communion and things like that, and when they're getting married. That's religion for most people anyway. So that's not really it's something for people to yell and scream about in America, but nobody gets killed over it in America for the most part. It's more a matter of, I think most of the real discrimination in this country is based on sex and race. You know, of course, there's a lot of anti-Semitism, but I don't know if that's viewed more as a racial thing or as a religious thing. I think it's more of a racial thing than anything else. Of course, it's kind of ridiculous in this case, but that's beside the point.
Yeah, I think that is another form of racism, obviously. So the racial and sexual prejudices, they're the major ones. I don't think we have any major religious problems.
So the point is here.
Nixon was a Quaker, wasn't he? They had a problem with that.
No, that was his dog. Was a Quaker.
Look at these phones here.
Goodness. Yeah, look at them.
I turned away from the phone for a moment to talk to Don.
I couldn't see them.
They all lit up while I was.
It's like until you held them up, I didn't know they were lit.
Well, we just lost two of them, so.
Well, you held them up. You know, they fell off.
No, that's not what happened. That's
well,
not.
Well, if you hit the floor, you can call again. It's all right.
Yeah.
Anyway. Well, you gonna listen to the, talk to some of these people?
I thought you were going to say something. You said anyway.
No, I meant anyway.
Oh,
talk.
Oh.
You know, let these good people go.
Okay, well, here we go then. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Yeah, I just wanted to call and tell you how happy I was to hear these things being discussed on the radio. I'm 30 years old, and when I was in college, all we talked about was getting into business school as a graduate student. Are you guys undergrads or what?
I graduated in 1982.
Oh, you're an old-timer.
Oh, yes, I am.
I graduated in 1981. The scary thing is, sir, that I don't know if they are talking about anything different now.
Yeah, it would seem that that people are talking more about business and making money these days than... Well, how long ago did you go to college?
Well, 75 to 80, about then.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I mean, people were just in... It was the me generation back then, too?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Where did you go to school, sir?
Albany State.
Really?
Yeah.
Because, you know, it was funny. I came back to Stony Brook and did some postgraduate work here, and I thought that it was much more goal-oriented now than it was even then. Of course, maybe I was just blind to all the world, as we tend to be when we're 18 years old and we know all the answers, and as we get older, we just try to find the right questions, I think.
Well, you guys are on the campus. Do you suppose anybody's listening besides the 13-year-old girl? I mean, are these people going to go to the next protest march, or are they going to go study for their...
Well, you know, the scientists in our staff have shown us that a lot more people listen than call. Getting people to call is the hard part. I mean, we had a guy from Fire Island calling before. We have people from out in the east and to the west and even in Connecticut. So... They're out there. It's not just on campus. In fact, the ironic thing is most of our listeners are off campus. It's hard to get the students these days on
your
campus.
Students still go home on weekends at Stony Brook, don't they?
Yeah. In fact, this was a vacation week, but they do come back occasionally, and they do slip on the dial, and we do hear from them, but not nearly as much as we'd like to.
Let me change the subject. Whatever happened to that professor that had all the problems? Ernest Dubé was his name?
Ernest Dubé was denied tenure, and he left last year.
Uh-huh.
He currently.
I didn't see the students get too outraged over that, did they?
Well, they did.
They did.
The African department, Africana Studies department, in particular. I'm not sure if very many white students were.
Oh, I don't know.
Active.
That's unfortunate. I think you're seeing a lot just in your evening news now. You're seeing a lot of people looking at Israel with less than complete faith, and I think they're seeing that there's two sides of the story over there. And I believe Dubé's remarks were along those lines, something to do with Zionism or something like that.
All Ernest Dubé did, and I did a couple of interviews with him before he left, he was simply he was asking the students to do a paper on the subject of equation of Zionism, and was he equating Zionism and Nazism?
Zionism is a form of
racism.
Racism. Okay, Zionism and racism.
Yeah.
Just that.
And maybe misquoting, because somebody else got in a lot of hot water for
Yeah, the interesting thing was that it got all out of hand, you know, unfortunately, I think that at a very low level, I think that hopefully most of our college students can think, but a lot of the trouble was caused by a small segment of the campus community and a lot of people from the outside who completely ignored really what was going on. He didn't say that Hebrews are all racist. He did not say that Judaism was a form of racism. This is not what he said. If he had said Judaism is a form of racism, that would be repugnant and really completely uncalled for. But that's not what he said. He said that a very far right sect was.
Well, if you ever see this, Meir Kahane, I mean, people of that ilk, I mean, there's a lot to be said. There is a far right wing element in Israel that is causing a lot of problems over there.
Yeah, Kahane, he should be in the Ku Klux Klan.
They don't get discussed for fear of reprisal. You know, it's sort of like people don't want to criticize Jackson because they're afraid of being called a racist, and people don't want to criticize Israel for the same reasons. They don't want to be called anti-Semitic.
There was somebody, I don't remember who it was.
Get it out, or, you know.
There was somebody who wrote for a Chicago paper who I was reading. I read an article the other day. He's a national columnist. He's syndicated. And he said he was in Chicago, of course, where they have a black mayor. And he said, when I supported, Harold Washington. When I supported Washington's views, I was called a nigger lover. And when I criticize Washington's views, I was called a racist.
Well, there's sort of an ignorant element out there that's going to toss those terms around no matter what you do. So.
Well, you know, we use terms in real, real broad, used ways now that just wipe out their real meaning. I mean, the very question of racism. Here, the problem is the people didn't know what they were talking about when the term racism was expanded to such a broad extent that it didn't make any sense. I mean, we do the same thing with the question of rights. What is a right? Most people use rights for things they have no business saying are rights.
So I think what happened in the DeBay case was people heard something and it sounded like something to them, and they pursued it based on that belief. And in actuality, it was really a very minor thing.
Well, it's sad to see that he lost the battle. I didn't really follow the story too closely, but apparently he lost the battle and he's gone now.
Well, he lost the battle. The last time I talked to him, though, he said he didn't want to come back to Stony Brook. He was perfectly happy living in the city and doing work for the African National Congress.
Is he really? Is he working for the ANC?
Yes, he is. He had been while he was out here, too. So he is living a fulfilling life.
He may be doing more good work now than he was before, actually.
Oh, good for him. I hope he has a better audience than that. He did at Stony Brook. Yeah.
We hope so.
Well, if there's any closet radicals listening, I went down to the protest rally last April down in Washington, D.C., and I was happy to see that there was a lot of middle-class-looking white people and unions and everything else and a lot of older folks.
Which protest was that?
This is a big one against, what was it, against Central America and South Africa, sort of an anti-Reagan deal. It was pretty well attended, but
the
surprising thing was that it was attended by a lot of labor organizations, a lot of more moderate, middle-class looking people, as opposed to your typical lunatic fringe that you get at a protest rally.
That's right.
That's
Eric and I weren't there.
The upcoming election. I think people like somebody like a Bush is not going to do too well.
Uh-huh. All right, well, thank you very much for calling. What town are you calling from, sir?
I'm calling from St. James.
Okay, thanks for listening.
Good night.
To update, he had mentioned a couple of things with Kahane and Israel and all that kind of thing. Last week, we did an interview on this program with Zeddy Terzi, who was the Palestine Liberation Organization's chief observer to the United Nations. At that time, they had been given 10 days to vacate their offices in New York, and something appeared in today's paper saying that the PLO has decided to fight the closure in U.S. courts. Before, they had said they weren't going to do that because it was a matter between the United Nations and the United States. But Ramsey Clark, the former United States Attorney General, said today that he will represent the Palestine Liberation Organization. Did you ever think you'd see the day?
Wow, and that's great.
in American courts. He will represent them in American courts in an effort to contest attempts to close its observer mission to the United Nations. The decision to have Mr. Clark represent the group indicates a reversal of the PLO position announced last week that it would boycott American courts on the matter. The PLO must shut its mission by Monday under legislation enacted by Congress last year. United States officials informed the United Nations and the PLO last week that they would begin judicial proceedings to enforce the expulsion order if the PLO did not comply. So that's kind of interesting update to that.
Well, yeah, Ramsey Clark coming in as their legal representative is certainly a very interesting development. This whole story is just humorous. I mean, if this had been written on a sitcom if this had been like something that Governor Dubois did in the series Benson, or not the governor, whatever his name was. You know, it's so typical. It's a dog tripping over his ears, for crying out loud, because it broke the week after this peace initiative where they're trying to get the PLO to be a voice, although not officially recognized.
A comedy of errors.
Lots of them.
632-6901. The program is Brain Damage. Eric Corley here with Don Kenyon up until midnight. And state your views, speak your mind, dial your phone. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hi. I've been listening, and I just don't think that Jesse Jackson is the greatest person for president.
Why not?
Well, first of all, he has some good ideas, but I just... first of all, I think it's against the Jews, and I don't think that's nice.
What evidence do you have of that?
I've just heard a lot that it's against the Jews, and he has some bad ideas, too.
Like? See, that's usually what people end up doing when you ask them to pursue the case.
Well, no, there's nothing wrong with having an opinion.
No,
but you know, whenever you have an opinion about anything, you should ask yourself why.
That's
and that caller clearly hadn't said why.
Yeah.
The answer of well, because really, you know, doesn't do. I think
that's what I get all the time when I ask people. They say, "Well, he's a Jew hater. He's anti-Semitic." I don't see that. I really don't.
Well, he
called New York Heimy Town. Does that mean he's anti-Semitic?
That means he's put his foot in his mouth pretty good.
He said something kind of silly, yeah, but I don't see him as being anti-Semitic.
Well,
just based on that, if there's more evidence, let me hear it. But I don't see it.
anyway, is there another caller there?
We have several calls, yes.
Oh, let's go on.
Do you want to give the phone number? I don't want to...
Oh, the phone number here is 632-6901.
I might say we're one call away from getting a bingo, which is something that we don't do all that often.
Wait a second, what's a bingo, Eric?
It's getting all five lines lit at once.
Well, let's talk to some of these people instead of babbling
ourselves. 632-6901. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
First of all, I'd like to laugh at that other caller that just called.
Oh, have a good laugh. Go ahead. that was a good one. Okay.
Well, give them a break. I think they were somewhat young.
We don't know which caller they were talking about. Which caller are you talking about?
The one that just called.
Okay.
Hung up.
All right. Good.
Yeah. Anyway, I'd like to say two things. One about Gary Hart.
Okay.
And I'd like to say that I think he was very foolish coming back into the presidential race and thinking that people...
I think that group could have provided the momentum for the entire country. I think there had to have been some people out there that supported him.
Right.
I didn't know them either. They must have been out there.
I know. I can't understand why anybody would vote for him. The second thing I would like to say is the thing about Jesse Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
I am not for him either. I think the main reason why he has such a blast following is because he's a religious leader.
That's probably the thing that disturbs me the most about him.
What kind of calling did you say? He has a lack of following?
No, black following. And I'm not prejudiced at all with him. I just don't... he's a preacher. And I think he's making... You know, I personally think that politics is a lot of, you know... Well,
yeah.
Well,
that's interesting. I'd like to explore that a little bit. Because he's a preacher, he's going to get a bigger black following.
Well, I think because he's a black preacher.
Somehow that
incites people more when you have a religious leader. And that's what bothers me. Him being a religious leader and a political leader is kind of troublesome. Although, in his case, I don't see it as offensive as, say, a Pat Robertson.
Uh-huh.
Because that kind of religious leader is more of a power religion leader.
Right.
Whereas Jesse Jackson's religion is more of a people-oriented type of religion.
Well, I don't think he's powerful really at all when it comes to politics. He might be when it's...
I don't know. I think that somebody who's number three, who's going to have he has 37% of the what's the latest percentage and how much of the delegates?
I had a figure for today for the caucus.
It's well over 25. percent of the delegates so far are pledged to him. Anybody who has that kind of delegate vote into a convention is not going to go on the first vote. We have to call him powerful. Whether you think that he's a charismatic or is he's a leader, that may be one other thing. But he certainly has power just by the virtue of all those votes.
I would say it's comparable to Kennedy versus Carter in 1980. Kennedy lost to Carter in the convention, and everybody sort of knew that he wasn't going to top Carter because Carter was the president after all.
That's a whole other story.
Yeah, but Jackson, I think, I don't know what the percentages is, you know, how they compare to each other, but he seems to be as powerful as Kennedy was in 1980, which is something to say.
Well, do you think he has any chance of winning?
Who?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Because what can happen, especially with the Central America thing, there can be... Who knows what kind of a scandal? It could make Contragate look like a playground squabble.
Are you asking whether you think he can win the Democratic nomination or the presidential election?
Yeah,
they're two different questions.
The nomination or the election?
The election, the presidential.
I think he can win either one because, you know, with Bush there could be another scandal, and with Dukakis, who knows what could happen with Dukakis.
Oh, I wouldn't trust Bush at all.
I mean, Dukakis hasn't had a major scandal yet. He's due.
Uh-huh.
I think that he could very clearly can win. I don't think he would be a president, but I think he very clearly could be on a presidential ticket as a vice president.
Talking about now.
That's true, too. He could be a vice president.
Well, I think that he could be a vice... He could win the nomination... I don't think he will win, but I think he could win the nomination. I think it's very possible that he could be a vice president on a Democratic ticket. I don't think that part of the practical side of me says I don't think that Jesse Jackson can win the national campaign against Bush because whether you like Bush or not, he has kept himself somewhat aloof from all of these things. Although, hey, the Americans will believe anything. Okay, I used to work in retail, so I understand that Americans will believe everything. And there's an old joke about retailers, which I think we can now tell about President Reagan. I'd like to ask you and maybe the rest of the call, a few more of the callers, how can you tell when President Reagan's lying?
You can't. They're all a bunch of phonies.
Oh yeah, we'll tell you that if you stay tuned for a few minutes, we'll ask a couple more callers. But we'll tell you the very simple answer to how to tell when President Reagan's lying.
How do you tell when President Reagan is lying? We want to have people call up
and give us other answers. I mean,
do you have an answer for that?
Oh yeah, I'll give you my answer.
He does have an answer because I heard it before.
He threw something at me, but
yes, it was quite a scene. But what town are you calling from?
Head of the Harbor.
Head of the Harbor. Oh, I like that place.
Thank you.
Well, thanks very much for calling then.
All right, thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye.
632-6901.
632-6901.
Area code 516. And give us a call on brain damage, and we'll talk to you about presidential elections and things like that. You know, either way, though, with Jesse Jackson, if he wins or not, doesn't win, you have to say he's come one hell of a long way.
Well, I think
in the last 4 years.
Well, there's one. It's very obvious with all the things going on that racism is alive and well in this country today. But we can at least talk about a black candidate for the presidency. Even though if we go up to Utica, people will go, he couldn't get anybody to really vote for him, would they? Anyway, it's going to be an adventure up there.
Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Yes, let me just turn on my radio.
Okay. At 23 minutes to midnight, we have 23 minutes left in our show.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, isn't that exciting? And this is about the time people take to get back to their radios?
This is real. It's the last reel, by the way.
Hello, how are you?
Yes, hi. I am definitely a Jackson supporter.
Uh-huh.
Because I feel that he is the only candidate that is running today that believes in justice in foreign policy.
You wouldn't happen to be a black churchgoer, would you?
Well, I'm black, but I'm not necessarily a churchgoer.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay.
So.
I was just hoping he'd be like a 45-year-old white man.
Let me ask, does Jesse Jackson appeal to you as a political leader or a religious leader?
Well, he appeals to me as a political leader. I mean, it doesn't really... His race does not really matter as far as I'm concerned because I'm a person who's very concerned with political and economic justice domestically. And as far as foreign policy is concerned, I just don't like the idea of a lot of the candidates ignoring certain issues and sort of putting certain things that are extremely important on the back burner. The other Democratic candidates haven't even opened their mouth about what's going on in Palestine. Forget Southern Africa. I don't even know if they could point Southern Africa out on the map. Central America, they're all trying to...
Well, they probably could if the name was printed.
We wouldn't give up American imperialism. You know, so you've got basically the only person who is saying, standing up for any sort of just policy in any of these areas is Jackson. You know, he's the only one who said that we should Israel should negotiate with the Palestinian resistance. He's the only one who says that the United States should take on a progressive stance in Southern Africa instead of sort of giving Southern Africa the wink and then turning around. He's the only one who says that we should end the war in Central America. So, you know, his policies are really just as far as I'm concerned.
Well,
and it wouldn't matter to me if he was green, you know, just as long as he had some policies that were progressive.
Uh-huh. On the other hand, I couldn't imagine a white candidate saying the things he says. I don't know why it would be so hard, but I just, you know, if somebody said that, he'd be labeled a communist or something. He'd have to be Gus Hall to say those kind of things.
Well, I don't know if it's impossible for a white candidate to have that kind of a platform, but...
I don't think it's
Jackson
politically necessary for a white candidate to have that
kind of a different political background than the average white candidate. You know, white candidates tend to be sort of from the, you know, a lot of really liberal Democrats tend to be these sort of, you know, really ultra-Yankee type people, like the Kennedys.
Yuppies.
And, you know, that sort of thing. But whereas Jackson got his political start in the civil rights movement, and that was sort of, off the beaten path type of liberal politics, if you will.
Uh-huh.
And I guess that's what has given him the elbow room to have more of an off the beaten path domestic and foreign policy nowadays.
I think you've identified very clearly one of Jackson's strengths is that he has a constituency. You said right there the other candidates, who are all white candidates, but they don't have a very absolutely clear constituency, and there's nothing wrong with having a very clear constituency. It's identifiable, it's a power base that you can count on, you can grow on. I think one of the reasons that some of the other Democratic candidates don't come out on issues is that they don't have to. Jesse Jackson had to do the very hard work of saying, yes, I know about the world. Yes, I do have positions. No, I am not just somebody who wants education for preschoolers. I am a real candidate with real opinions. And I think that, contrary to some of the other callers we've had this evening, you have very clearly identified why you like Jesse Jackson. And even if someone disagrees with those views, at least you have very clear ideas of why you like Jesse Jackson, and that's good.
Yes, again, it wouldn't matter to me if he was green. I don't like the idea of every time Jesse Jackson is mentioned, we've got to mention his skin color. You know, let's not forget he's black, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, you know, none of us discussed what color our hair is here, though,
right.
You know, of course.
I mean, it's just unfortunate. I mean, I'm not trying to say that America has progressed to the point where race isn't an issue. That's clearly not the case.
Oh, no.
But at least I would like to see a little more progress coming from the mainstream media as far as trying to look at Jackson as his issues present him and not necessarily as his race presents him. And incidentally, I'd like to say a little something about the Jewish comment that he made a couple of years ago.
Okay.
Presidential candidates have been known to make statements about blacks off the cuff. for years. I mean, I can think of things that Nixon has said that
how about Ronald Reagan?
Hair spin wouldn't be presentable on the radio.
Well, Ronald Reagan said there was no racism when he grew up.
Yeah, I mean, why candidates say things about blacks and other minorities all the time? But that's not an issue, you know. It's so what? I guess what they're saying is, well, so what? You sitting in your living room probably say the same thing.
Well, I think it would be an issue if somebody said something today.
Yeah, but I mean, would people? Would it be such an issue that it would be something that people would sort of pause and think, well, gee, I'd better not vote for him.
Well, no, I think you're looking at a case where people were looking for an excuse.
If you can think of anything scandal-wise that he's been involved with, this has been Jesse Jackson's scandal, unfortunately.
Uh-huh. Well, I think
particular comments.
I think more so his association with people like Farrakhan, who he has completely distanced himself from.
But
and Farrakhan
has
very very pointed views on race. You know, and he could be accused a lot more readily of being a racist than Jackson. So I think it was more the association of Jackson and Farrakhan.
Yeah, I also think that his foreign policy towards Palestine has a lot to do with it. There is a very strong Zionist sect in New York that sees this as a way of getting at Jackson, period. You know, not just because of whatever reason, but mainly because he does take the point of view that Israel should negotiate with the resistance. And a lot of people in New York and in other places don't like that idea.
I don't know about the Zionist sect part, but I know one thing. I think that a lot of people were just looking for an excuse to say there's something that they could point at that they didn't like about Jesse Jackson, so they wouldn't really have to say why they didn't like Jesse Jackson. But anyway.
What town are you calling from, sir?
I'm calling from Quorum.
Okay, well, thanks very much for calling.
I wanted to answer the joke.
Go ahead.
What's your answer?
When his lips move.
That's it.
He got it.
I know. It's an old joke, but you can definitely tell. That's how you know.
Well, let's repeat the joke in case somebody just tuned in.
In case somebody just
have
tuned
good
in.
Evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
Good night. The question was, how can you tell when Ronald Reagan's lying? And the answer is, of course, when his lips are moving. Remember, this is the man who said that on the day that the Dow Jones Industrials crashed 200 points, that all the leading economic indicators are up. This is the man who said the 82nd Airborne is not going to Honduras. This is the man who's saying we didn't pressure the Honduran president to bring those people in. And this is the man who says that they are there only for an exercise in one breath, and on the other breath says that they are there to make a statement.
No connection to what's going on down there.
They have, well, and of course, he's told us several times over the last couple of days that there is no connection. Of course, except today in his fireside address, I don't know if any of you listened to that, but he said.
Did he try to light the fire again?
No. Well, you know what? Did he call him fireside chats? Anyway, it's his radio address.
Yeah.
That's right, radio address. I'm sorry, wrong president.
Almost burned down the White House.
Anyway, in his radio address, he said that they were down there to make a statement, which completely contradicts the other things he said. But that's in America, where we sell our presidents like hamburger. You can do with these sort of things.
And if you look at the grade, you can see why we try to do that. The latest unofficial results in the Democratic presidential caucuses in Kansas today, and we have 100%, 115 of 115 caucuses.
Was that the number of people who voted?
I don't know how many people actually voted.
Okay,
but. You know, actually, this might be. You see, Associated Press gives us three columns. One has the name of the candidate. One has the percentage, because it says percent afterwards. And the third column is just a number. So that could very well be a number of people, or maybe a number of delegates. I don't know.
That's got to be delegates.
Well, Dukakis has 278 of that mystery number, which is 36%. Jackson, 235, or 31%. Gore, 125.
Those aren't delegates. There can't be. They're not that many delegates
in
the state of Kansas.
I think. Well, caucuses aren't very big.
Okay. Well, anyway,
that's what disturbs me about this: the fact that so few people are making these big decisions.
Really.
Gore 16%, uncommitted 15%, Gephardt 2%, Simon 0%. And
so what
Simon
were
those
percentages again for those of us like me who can't listen very well?
Dukakis 36%, Jackson 31%, Gore 16%, uncommitted 15%, Gephardt 2%, and Simon 0%. And if that mystery number is actually a number of voters, Simon did not get a single vote.
Yeah, well,
Yeah, we've embarrassing.
Yeah, no, we've picked on Ronald Reagan enough tonight. Why don't we pick on Albert Gore, you know, Prince Albert.
I don't know enough about... Oh, Prince Albert. Okay, I've been watching Anna Doonesbury, but other than that, I really don't know enough about him to say anything.
Actually, a lot of people don't.
People mix him up with Dole all the time.
My wife and I are currently about 300 miles apart, and we have been for the last week. Not because we're having problems, just because we're apart. I asked her what she thought of the cartoons on Prince Albert, and she didn't know who they were making fun of.
Hmm. Interesting.
I always thought she was smart.
Well, you know, at first I didn't either, because I didn't know whose first name was Albert, because they don't refer to him that much as Albert. Prince Albert. It just kind of threw me for a loop. I eventually figured it out.
Okay. But, does anybody know who Prince Albert is and why we don't like him? Anyway.
Does anybody know anything about other cultures?
No, not that. Anyway.
I keep getting down on Americans, don't I, and our listeners. But we've got some pretty smart people around here.
Well, obviously...
Of course, they all work for us, but no,
that's not... Well, those last three callers did not work for us.
Oh, they don't? No, that's right, they don't.
They didn't.
Okay.
Well, and speaking of smart callers, before they get you know, frustrated because they're smart and they're not being paid attention to, why don't we say hello?
Okay, 632-6901 is our phone number. We have about 10 minutes left. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
What's going on?
Not much, how are you?
Pretty good. What's the issue, just the elections in general, or what?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah?
Who do you support?
Well, most of the people are just kind of lame, except for Jesse.
Uh-huh. What do you like about Jesse?
Wait a second, hold it. Let's get down to brass tacks here. Define the word lame.
Lame? Just very uninteresting people.
They're uninteresting. That's a good reason not to be a leader, I think, is you have to be interesting.
There's somebody right beside me who'd like to make an opinion.
Okay.
No, he's radio shy.
So that's understandable.
Yeah.
So,
I think, the whole election is kind of boring.
Uh-huh. So if you were to go out and vote tomorrow, among all the candidates that are running now, who would you vote for?
Jesse Jackson.
Jesse Jackson, then why?
Well, I mean,
just because he's not lame, in your opinion?
I mean, it's kind of like a no-win situation, if other interesting candidates were voting, probably running, I'd like make my decision, but I probably wouldn't vote for Jesse. But I might.
We've established what lame is. How about establishing what interesting is? Does interesting do interesting candidates, are they for or against intervention in Nicaragua? Are interesting candidates for or against cutting the defense budget? Are interesting candidates for or against the deficit?
You lost our caller, Don. You asked too many questions.
You
can't ask that many questions of a caller.
Well, no, but
people don't want to hear issues. They don't want to be confronted with decisions.
But oh, well, now I know what...
now you know how I feel.
But lame. I didn't... I really don't try to come across like Morton Downey, but I see how he got his start.
Yes, a jump start, I think. Well, 632-6901 is our phone number.
Did we just I thought we had one more phone call, or it would have been nicer to that poor gentleman.
Well, the lines are open, so if you want to call up and give
it's
us...
It's okay. You can call me names at home if you want. I mean, you know.
Yeah, but not over the air, though.
but not over the air, no.
We'll give out Don's home number later.
It's okay. I won't be there anymore.
That's right. He's moving. Moving up to Utica, huh?
Yes.
Utica. Wow, it's a nice place. I've never been there, but I hear it's nice.
Well, yeah, I've told you it's nice because I'm going there.
It'll be nicer with Don up there. Don, who, in case you only listen to the radio station on Saturday nights, Don did a wonderful classical music program for... How long did you do that classical show for?
Almost 5 years now.
5 years. And before that, you did other kinds of shows, too, didn't you? Music programs.
Yeah, I did overnights. And, I saved my strange leftist political comment for the evening. And then I tried to be straight-laced in the afternoon. It's real funny. When I got here, I was amongst the normal mainstream student body. And by the time this year, I felt like I was old and in the way.
Uh-huh.
Although it's awfully easy to be a bleeding heart liberal on a campus like Stony Brook.
I don't know about that anymore. It's awfully easy just to ignore everything on a campus like Stony Brook. I mean, you know, at school.
No, the definition of a bleeding heart liberal is someone is somebody who says and is, you know, it's like raises any objection or cares about politics at all, or goes farther in his political decisions than saying lame and unlame. Or that's sort of like cool and uncool. That's the way Chris Crowley takes care of programming decisions, though. Cool.
How's that?
And uncool.
Cool. I thought it was lame and unlame.
No. That's the last voter's way of. Look, it works for Chris. He doesn't makes great programming.
Well, Chris
decisions.
Does say lame. I hear him say that a lot.
Oh, he says lame.
Oh, I hear him say lame all the time.
Maybe he's going to the lame system. Maybe I shouldn't have been so hard on that last caller. Maybe more to this lame.
I don't think you were hard on the last system. Caller. I think you were asking good questions, but maybe too fast and too furious. I don't know, 632-6901.
I just wanted to understand, you know, I'm confused, that's
I understand.
All.
Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Hey, I called a little earlier, I heard you mention Albert Gore there. You guys all realize who his wife is, don't you?
His wife, go ahead, tell us.
Out of that and his whole primary thing, that's the biggest strike against him, I think. Nobody's making too much about that, not that that's a burning issue or anything, but... Even the younger folks don't seem to be aware of who she is.
Uh-huh.
Well, anybody who's gone to a Frank Zappa concert is painfully aware of who Tripper Gore is.
Well, what do you guys, I hate to be unfair to you guys, but what do you think the big issues are other than whether or not we invade Nicaragua? You keep saying you'd like to hear something besides who's lame or not.
When you're...
North side of Nicaragua, and you know, what do you perceive to be the big burning issues here?
The fact that that we have enough arms to destroy the world 30 times over, that's it's probably more than that.
But the
by
next
now.
President isn't going to take care of that himself.
No, but we should at least address it in a really
Jackson is the only one who has said he would slash the defense budget. I mean, that's got to commend him.
Well, I don't think, you know, all
it's unfair to call it a defense budget because it's, you know, it's gone past the point of defense and gone into the point of lunacy. It's call it a war budget if you're going to call it anything.
Well, I think
that at least illustrates the lunacy of it.
Well, I think there's a more basic question here with the defense budget. It's very hip. To say that we're going to cut the defense budget.
Well,
it's very good.
Nobody's saying it. That's how
or if you're Ronald Reagan to say that we're going to increase the defense budget. But right now, the fact of the matter is, whether you want to decrease the defense budget or not, we have to take a realistic view of what we want to do with the military. It's very clear that this country cannot continue to go on trying to be big brother to all the countries in the world. Right now, we're trying to defend tankers in the middle of the Red Sea. We're trying to send people into Honduras, and we're also committed through NATO and SECO and all those other O's. That most of I've forgotten half of them to so many things. So and over such a large portion of the world, we couldn't begin at this point to meet our commitments if 50% of them were all called in at once, and we have to face that fact.
The other day, the rationale that's always run up the ladder for why we're in the Middle East is that Israel, no matter how bad they are, is our ally, and they're an important ally because we have to keep that oil flowing.
Hey, look, it's like we couldn't do it.
$18 a barrel, and the statistic was that we're spending roughly $180 a barrel to defend that $18 a barrel oil.
And the point of the fact is we couldn't do anything about it anyway. We are not that, it is not realistic at this point for us to think that we can take care of foreign policy with military means. It just isn't going to work.
We're missing the fundamental point. The fundamental point, a caller much earlier, I think, hit the nail on the head. They were discussing capitalism. And when you have a political system where the defense contractors are donating money to political candidates, you're never going to get away from this. That's the ultimate issue.
Do you know which president warned about that in his farewell address?
Mr. Eisenhower.
Mr. Eisenhower. You know, and it's really funny. I made fun of Eisenhower for years.
You're old enough to have made fun of Eisenhower?
Well, no, I mean, from the first time I started reading about these things when I was 14, and, you know, you roughly put people in these big pigeonholes, and I had him in this one pigeonhole for a real long time, and I said, this is the Cold War guy.
Well, I'll tell you, most your generals are pretty reasonable people, you know, especially the retired ones that are speaking out now, but the people to be afraid of are more
the
people like the Reagans, the people that are on the fringe, that are working for the complex, that are not part of it. You know,
I think Ronald Reagan's certainly part of
it. Making money selling the weapons. I think the people who are actually in the military and have half a brain understand.
Well, I think it's just a problem. I think Ronald Reagan only has half a brain.
Yeah.
Well, no, we don't have to get into that now.
Yeah, that's pretty frightening, but we did re-elect the man, you know, so it speaks more about the people in this country than about Reagan himself.
We elect candidates on the basis of whether they're lame or not.
Well,
and more important than the lame issue was
tomorrow,
interesting.
If you were eligible to run again, I hate to say it, but I think you'd win again. I think there's the caller from Forum was very articulate, and I wanted to commend him. But if he thinks that this country is not full of racists, he's wrong. Jesse Jackson is...
Oh, no, he didn't say this country isn't full of racists. I think he said they were.
For strategic purposes, but he doesn't stand a chance of winning either the nomination or even as a vice president. He'd sink the ticket if he were the vice president. I think...
That's because he's a very popular person. He's a, you know, as far as presidential abilities, I mean, even Republicans are embarrassed.
Racism. I don't think a black man, at least not Jesse Jackson, you know, I think a very humble black man, a lot of people like a Mayor Tom Bradley or Wilson Good or Harold Washington.
Well, if we ever had a humble president...
Things like that, and you can possibly build a coalition around it, but something like Jesse Jackson is unacceptable to your average white racist, you know...
We have to cater to the white racists of the country. Well, thank you very much for calling, sir. We do have to go now.
Okay, enjoy you guys. Take care.
Take care. We really can't say anything more because it's 1 minute to midnight and we're off the air at midnight. I mean, we're not off the air. Our show is off the air.
Do I turn into a pumpkin?
What do you usually turn into at midnight?
Well, this is, you know, this is my last program.
That's right, it is. But you will be back to visit, won't you?
Well, I'm taking my card out of here and everything, you know.
Well, it's serious stuff. Don Kenyon moving upstate. What will happen next?
I don't know. Maybe California will fall into the sea?
Oh, that would be interesting. That would be interesting.
Well, maybe I should run for president. It's clear I'm not humble.
Someone should run for president.
Somebody should run from the president. Well, we're all running from the president.
Running from the president. That's a great title for a book.
Someone
out there wants to write it, that's a great title. You can use it. Just give us credit.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Don Kenyon, thanks for stopping in on Brain Damage tonight, and good luck.
The royalty checks will be forwarded to us.
They certainly will. Eric Corley here every Saturday night for Brain Damage from 10 to 12. Stay tuned for the brothers, Nick and Bill, waiting in the wings with Lobotomy here on WUSB, Stony Brook.
The lunatic is on the cross. The lunatic is on the grass. Remembering games, daisy chains, laughs. Got to keep the loonies off the path. The lunatic is in the hall. The lunatics are in my hall. The paper holds their folded faces to the floor. Every day the paper boy brings more. The door, throw away the key. Someone in my head, but it's not me.
Concert billboard for Sunday, March 13th. Tonight, Combo Limbo will be at Tram. The Chrome Suckers will be at CBGB's. Lil Jackson and Monty Alexander will be at the Blue Note. The Ramones are playing at Hofstra. And Sid Caesar and Buddy Greco will be at the Chilla Center. Monday, March 14th, the Les Paul Trio will be at Fat Tuesdays. Poet Taku Sundiata and his band Dada Doo Dada will be at the Bernard Mayer Auditorium. Luther Allison and Little Buster will be at the Lone Star. And Maya Lovett and Mary Chapin will be at the Bottom Line. Tuesday, March 15th, Cheetah Chrome and the Waldos will be at the Cat Club. Hood will be playing at Drums. And the Wild Blue Marlins and the Bureaucrats will be at the Lone Star. Wednesday, March 16th, the Altar Boys and Secret Service will be at Siberia. Chieftains will be playing at Avery Fisher Hall. Gato Barbieri will be at SOB's. Hal Roach and John McNally will be at the Westbury Music Fair. Johnny Copeland will be at the Lone Star. And Gerald Albright will be at the Bottom Line. Thursday, March 17th, Day for Night will be at Sparks. John Brannan and Blue Rodeo will be at the Bottom Line.